Welcome back to New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the real pleasure to be talking to the author of Inside the New Mexico Senate, Boots, Suits, and Citizens, published by University of New Mexico Press. Dee Dee Feldman, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you, Heath?
I'm doing wonderfully. A beautiful spring day here where I'm recording. Tell me a little bit about your background before we get to the book. We know just a little bit from the book, but maybe you can tell us just a little bit more about yourself before we talk about the book you've written.
Sure. Well, I arrived here in New Mexico in 1975, fresh off the boat, so to speak, from the East Coast, where I lived in Pennsylvania and grew up there, got a master's degree in political science from the University of Pennsylvania. So I had an interest in politics and public policy, never really planned to do anything with it, but actually I was interested in it, and lo and behold, many years later in 1996, I ran for the New Mexico Senate, and I've served 16 years in the New Mexico Senate, decided not to run again and to write the book in 2012.
The book is just is so interesting. You know, I think you approach this material, you know, both as a political scientist, and it's clear that sort of your background, but also in many ways as a memoir. I wonder if you can take us sort of verbally to New Mexico, and that is, if I was to travel to New Mexico on the first day of the legislative session, what would I see and what would I hear? I wonder if you can set us in the so-called roundhouse. Can you place us in that first legislative session and who we would see and what we would hear?
Well, New Mexico is such a unique state. There's a column in the New Mexico magazine called One of Our 50 is Missing. And it comes from the fact that so many people don't think New Mexico is part of the United States. They think it's part of Mexico. And so there are constant gaffes about people asking if they need shots to come here, if they need a passport. While New Mexico is unique, it does exemplify some of its legislature, anyway, does exemplify some of the commonalities that all legislatures have, the gap between the rural and the urban, and New Mexico is predominantly a rural state with one urban center, that's Albuquerque, and maybe Santa Fe, which I think more people are familiar with because of its great food and Southwest style, and any opening day of the legislature features a diversity that represents the state's population. We are a majority-minority state. In other words, Anglos or white folks are in the minority here, and over 50% of our population is composed of Hispanics, Native Americans, with a smattering of Blacks, Asians, and others. So the first chapter of the book, which kind of describes this diversity and the ambiance of an opening day at the New Mexico legislature, is called Cue the Mariachis and Put on Your Cowboy Hat. The New Mexico legislature is in session. So I think it's an attitude where you have, you know, high-tech folks from Los Alamos, where we have a national lab that does much of the research on nuclear weapons, to, you know, the Zuni war chief, to stylish ladies from Santa Fe in their Santa Fe concho belts and boots. It's really, in that respect, quite unique.
Yeah, and some of the people that show up in the book are so interesting. I love the story that Senator Pinto told you about his first trip hitchhiking to the Senate in 1975.
Yeah.
I wonder if you'd recount that story for us and what it says about New Mexico politics.
Well, Senator John Pinto is one of the oldest members of the New Mexico legislature. He was a Navajo code talker during World War II. Comes from a very rural area of the Navajo Reservation, about a third of which is in New Mexico. And he, you know, like many Navajos, doesn't have too much money. And when he was first elected, he was hitchhiking to the New Mexico Senate. And somebody in a beat-up Cadillac pulled up next to him, picked him up, and said, you know, where are you going? And he said, well, I'm going to Santa Fe. I've just been elected to the New Mexico Senate. And the guy who picked him up, Senator Manny Aragon, said, ha, I'm going there too. I've just been elected to the New Mexico Senate. And so that was the beginning of a 30-year friendship between these two men. And Senator Aragon later became the president pro tem. Senator Pinto is still in the legislature and annually regales his fellow senators with a Navajo rendition of the potato song that we all look forward to and beat on our desk. We can't really speak Navajo, but it is kind of a highlight of the session for the public and the senators as well.
Yeah, this story I think captures so much about the some of the geography of the state and just so much more about the history of it.
Yeah.
So what are the primary dividing lines in the Senate? You mentioned in the book that Democrats have held a majority for much of the last 100 years. Are there other divisions that are more prominent in New Mexico than party? And if so, what are they? What brings people apart and what pulls people together?
Well, the subtitle of the book is Boots, Suits, and Citizens. And so that kind of describes some of the major players in the state as well as in the legislature. The boots being the rural interests, those who are interested in preserving traditional agriculture, farming, ranching, and in particular the use of water in the arid Southwest. The suits, which represent the special interests and the lobbyists who are represented 6-1, six lobbyists to every one legislator in Santa Fe, and then the citizens. And the citizens, I think we've talked about some of the diversity among the population, but the citizen advocates are represented in that term, as well as the legislators themselves, because we are a citizen legislature. And we in New Mexico get no salary. We have no full-time staff. We have a part-time legislature that meets only 1 month in the even-numbered years and 2 months in the odd-numbered years. That sets up a sort of string of consequences from that one fact. But the major divisions are I would say, newcomers versus old-timers. I would say northerners versus the South. We have a largely Hispanic North and a largely sort of little Texas-type east side of the state. And then in the South, we kind of have a mixture. We're on the border, of course, and we have a mixture of fast-growing Hispanic population and a more traditional ranching, pecan-growing, chili-growing sector down there that can be quite conservative, although often Democratic, as in the national scene.
Yeah, and there's some great terms in the book one of them that I was wondering if you could just explain a little bit about, which is what is a hat bill?
I use this term
in the book. So what is a hat bill, and how for you entering into the Senate would you have sort of witnessed your first hat bill?
Oh yeah, well suddenly, you know, there's some agricultural interest at issue when the committee room is suddenly filled up with cowboy hats. And this happened to me when I was first there, when we had a bill come before the Conservation Committee, which I was on, and it was about regulating dairy farming in the eastern part of the state. There had been a big influx of dairy farmers coming from California, where the regulations were strict, and coming to the east side of New Mexico, where the regulations were not quite so strict. And so this was a bill about requiring the dairy farmers to line their pits, wherein they put all their waste products, to line them so that the groundwater would be protected. And, of course, the dairy farmers, clad in hats and boots, were there to prevent that from happening and to protect their industry. And, you know, there are other industries, too. For example, some of the book goes into the cockfighting dispute in New Mexico. New Mexico was one of the last states to ban cockfighting, which I don't know whether you're familiar with it or not.
Sure.
But it's kind of a blood sport. Now, with the heightened consciousness of animal cruelty, became very controversial. But it took 20 years in New Mexico, because of its rural nature, to get that sport banned. And we had, you know, just, you know, legions of cockfighters up there in the roundhouse. We call it the roundhouse because our capital is round, and very unique amongst all the other capitals, a territorial style building. They were there, and they were a rowdy bunch, and they were not happy when finally, after 20 years, cockfighting was restricted. And they brought suit, and they held protest cockfights and so on. And it was, you know, quite the drama.
Yeah, this is, you know, I think one of the things you take away, or I took away from the book, is this New Mexico Senate is clearly an institution that you have a great deal of admiration for,
yeah.
But you're not without your criticisms.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if you can, you know, before we get to some of the, you know, some of your suggestions on reform, maybe you could point to a couple of examples of things that you saw that you weren't satisfied with as a way to introduce what you think could be reforms that would improve the system of governance in New Mexico.
Well, it's kind of the Wild West out here in New Mexico. And until 2009, we had very few restrictions on political campaigns. And if you want to look at how a legislature works, look to the political campaigns that precede the election of its members, and you will learn a lot about whether there's going to be a big partisan divide, whether there's going to be the ability of members to compromise and to move forward together. And in New Mexico, until 2009, we had no caps on contributions, unlike most states. We have no ethics commission here in New Mexico, unlike, again, most states, even though we have a citizen legislature where citizens are expected to keep their day jobs and serve part-time in the legislature, which kind of opens the door to conflict of interest in many ways, and also gives a lot more power to lobbyists who, you know, are cognizant of the fact that legislatures do not get a salary here, often are looking for the next meal, because we get only a per diem that covers basically just your hotel room in Santa Fe if you're from outside the immediate area. And the lobbyists are there to step in to provide entertainment, provide beverages, provide food, and information and campaign contributions, because, you know, it's taking ever greater amounts of money to win this seat in the House or the Senate, which doesn't pay anything. So the area is ripe for reform. I've always advocated an ethics commission, some limits on lobbyists, and many of the lobbyists here are former legislators. I think that's probably true in other legislatures as well. But here in a small state, where personal relationships are everything, it gives the lobbyists an extraordinary amount of power. And some of them are former legislators. Some of them are actually family members of senators and representatives, which gives them kind of an inside track over and above ordinary citizens who come and are still looking for a parking place, whereas the lobbyist, who was the best man at the committee chair's wedding, knows where the pressure points are and where the votes can be found.
The book is, I think, just is really interesting as political science, but I hope that those listening can tell the very personal take that you've brought to the subject matter really does add, and I think adds nuance to what we sometimes approach these subjects with, which is some cold statistics. I think the anecdotes that you recall and this firsthand experience just is really very interesting. The book is out.
Yeah.
Do you have another book in you? Are you you're not in an academic position, so maybe you're not required to publish. But do you have another book that you're either working on or you would love to work on in the future?
Well, I was also a journalist for many years, and I guess I did mention that earlier. And so I want to go back to writing a little bit shorter form pieces and some examinations of some of the positive things that are going on. You know, I've written so much about politics, and politics is, you know, and policies, like trying to get things done, trying to find an opening so that you can squeeze through something really good. And I was very successful at that in the legislature, I think by most accounts. But it was very long-term, very hard. And it sometimes affects your belief that good things can happen. And so I want to write about some of the good things that ordinary people are doing outside of government, outside of partisan politics, to move New Mexico forward. And, you know, New Mexico is, I think, the second lowest per capita income in the country. And we have just been ranked, you know, last on the worst place to bring up children. And we have a whole series of those things. So we need to find out that there are people here in New Mexico doing great things to preserve the environment, doing great things to build affordable housing that is green, that is energy conservative and humane. That there are new models of health care out there that are going to help restrain the costs of providing this service in a rural area by utilizing care coordination, by utilizing some of the traditional promontora community health workers that we have here in New Mexico in the context of a medical home or a more cooperative, accountable system of providing person-centered care. And these kinds of things, I think, you know, can provide a model to other states as well. So that's kind of what's germinating in me right now.
Yeah, well, until we have that book, Dee Dee Feldman's current book with a beautiful cover is called Inside the New Mexico Senate, Boots, Suits, and Citizens, published by University of New Mexico Press and available up at their website. Dee Dee Feldman, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed sharing some stories with you.